Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
I'm actually, you know what I'm going to do, Sid? I'm going to lower my microphone volume just a skosh, because that's the level of my energy, of my excitement to be recording this podcast with my wife. We were on vacation. We had a beautiful time in South Carolina, rejuvenated by the sun, the surf, the sand.
Mm-hmm. And the doing of nothing.
The doing nothing. But here we are doing things again, because we can only keep up the doing nothing for about 5 consecutive days.
That's it. That's it. Back. No, it's good to take a break and do nothing every once in a while. I think for all of us, turn your brain off for a little bit.
I didn't do nothing. I did nothing from the perspective of the capitalist machine. Mm-hmm. I actually did important work on my soul.
Right. I read a book.
Yeah.
And I rested. And I stared at the waves and contemplated
prayerful contemplation
existence. So it was a great week of relaxation. Yes. But it's time to get back to business.
There back
was
to
a
business.
Now a big event.
Crime
happened.
Doesn't rest, and neither do we.
A big event happened all over, but especially here in our house the other night. We had some friends over to watch.
To
watch a podcast.
Yes.
Because it was a very special podcast.
Yeah, about Taylor Swift. And I recreated, we recreated that on this week's My Brother and Me. Did I tell you that? I took down the questions that Jason asked.
Uh-huh.
So, because I figured that's going to be the most popular podcast ever, so I could learn it to feed the masters. So I was just asking, I just used those exact questions to
I believe I told you not to do that.
You did, but we made it fun.
Uh-huh. You got to be careful. Listen.
Football men will never listen.
No, the football men won't listen. But here's
Captain Haddock from Tintin can't find me. Sydney.
Listen, we have a Swiftie in our house.
Yep.
We have a daughter who's a Swiftie.
It's coming from inside the house.
I have a sister who's a Swiftie. We have many dear friends who are Swifties. And you do not irritate them. Don't irritate them.
That's kind of my role for all the women in my life. But yes, especially the Taylor Swift fans.
Yes. But it was a big event here in our house because of all of our adjacent Swifties. Not that we're not. I appreciate her music.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I knew she was trouble when she walked in.
Yes. But I think that, like, we're talking about, like, the fandom.
Yeah.
You know, and that this was a big moment. And this is adjacent to our topic. This is where I'm going with this. Yeah. You're looking at me like, what are you doing, Sydney? Why are you talking
That's
about Taylor
not
Swift?
That's for them. That's just for you.
Okay.
Okay.
And I was and I just think it's important to notice that this wasn't just about, like, we like this person's music. She's like a cultural phenomenon, right?
It's a
and
moment. So it's a moment.
It was a moment. So anything.
Moment. It felt, I was embarrassed. Here's how big it was. I, a professional podcaster, was embarrassed it was happening on a podcast. I was like, we shouldn't do this here. We need a larger.
This is bigger than
this
podcast.
This is bigger than podcast. I think I stood on the couch and said, this can't be a podcast. I make podcasts.
Anyway. If this is a podcast, what do we do? No, listen, everyone has a podcast and there's space for all of us to do what we do.
Honey, in this exact moment, I cannot have you quoting the title of my failed podcasting book at me. I beg of you right now. I'm so vulnerable. You do not understand how bad the green-eyed monster is running rampant in my soul, honey. You can't talk about the book right now.
We got an email from a listener, Kate. Thank you, Kate, about a topic that I'll be honest, as I delved into it, I thought, ooh, this will be a fun little medical, weird, historical thing. And it's maybe not as medical as our usual topics, but it's interesting. It was treated as a medical issue at the time.
Okay.
And I think it's relevant to things like, you know, fandoms like the Swifties. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about Listomania. Have you heard of Listomania?
Okay. When you said that, the only thing, and it's like probably a trick, I don't know, I hear the one part in that one Phoenix song where they say Listomania.
Right. But you don't know what they're referencing.
I don't remember the song. I remember that was the name of a song on the album as well. That's like literally when you say Listomania, I hear Listomania. Listomania.
It's interesting because to me, the idea of like a fandom, like a collective that's more than just like, hey, do you like this band? Oh, me too. Cool. But like, you know, like mm-hmm. as a force.
Yes.
It feels like a very modern idea because I kind of connect it with the internet. Yeah. Like, how do you coalesce that mm-hmm. without the power of the World Wide Web?
That's, you know what I would say, Sid? I think that what the web has enabled us to do is make those sorts of connections at that level of enthusiasm about smaller things. You know what I mean? Like, Beatlemania, obviously the one that pops in. I think that can happen on that scale because of the size of the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can have smaller and more niche fandoms because it's easier for them to find them each other these days.
Which is evidenced by the fact that occasionally TikTok will surface to me a clip from Grease 2.
Yes. It's also evidenced by the fact that I have a career where I'm gainfully employed doing what I do, where in a much more just age, I would have been some sort of street clown or a poorly regarded dock worker.
But this is not merely a modern convention. The idea of fandoms, obsessive. And when I say obsessive, that can be a critical term. I just mean something that would, your love for something would become so emotionally overpowering that you would demonstrate that in a very like public dramatic fashion.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Where do we go from this is the kind of music I like to this is the only thing that I'm thinking about?
Right.
Right.
Okay. So let's go back to October 22nd, 1811.
Whoa!
The Kingdom of Hungary.
Sorry, I was thinking about doing more of a time tunnel. I was thinking about more of a time tunnel on Sawbones that we could start doing.
Oh.
Okay, so can you say it?
Okay, so let's go back to October
22nd, 1811. Whoa!
Oh, do I have to do it with you?
I would love you're in,
I'd
you're in
not.
The time tumbler with me.
I'd rather not.
Sorry, what? Okay.
I would just.
I appreciate your accent so much that I'm not going to make you get the time tumbler with me. I'll steer the time tumbler and you're cool, calm, and collected. Okay.
Okay.
You can steer, actually, and you're, focused, and I'll just, grab the walls, whoa.
Okay, I'm programming in the date. This is the last time. Tap. October 22nd, 1811.
Whoa!
Okay, we're in the kingdom. Oh, we're still going.
Okay.
We're in the Kingdom of Hungary. Franz Liszt is being born. I don't have a lot of details about the birth, but that's where our story starts. He's been born, and so everything can come from there. His father was an amateur musician, and so he encouraged Liszt to pursue music because he loved music. He wasn't making a career off of it. Some things are
careful
just...
Careful the things you say, children.
But it turned out he was a prodigy.
Lucky
10,000 hours.
I see. No, I do. You have to wonder. It is like, it turns out. You know what's crazy, guys? I made my son play piano all the time.
And he's a prodigy.
It turns out I'll be darned he's a prodigy at it.
And he was performing publicly by the age of 9. Should we tell our kids this?
Honey, you joke, but every time I read a story like this, I'm like, 6, we're hosed. No way. We're done. It's over. We missed it.
He was composing by 11.
Charlie just turned 11. We're hosed.
And
we
there was a...
She was proud that she made her bed today. We've screwed up.
Aw, she was. It was so sweet. They're reading a book in class about the importance of making your bed or something. I don't know. Anyway, there's a story where he did a public concert where he was 11 and Beethoven was there. And afterwards, he came up on stage and gave him a kiss on the forehead. Like, yes.
Talk about a different era, huh? Excuse me. Excuse me?
Although...
Mr. Beethoven, what are you... That's my son.
It is possible that this story is untrue. Anyway, the point is,
I like
he was
that
celebrating.
At the end of the anecdote, yeah. After I've already done the jokes, that's much better.
No,
thank
that's
you.
Good. That's good. I always like to note that on Sawbones, we try to only spread truth. And so when I tell a story that like
now
historians debate this, like yeah. It maybe, but probably not. But like it's not. The point is, he was celebrated. After his father passed away, he had like this period of his life where he was sort of like introspective and wandering and drinking and smoking, and he wasn't sure what, I don't know, music, is this my thing? You know, we all go through it, yeah, right? Like that, there. Yeah, right. And then he saw the great violinist Paganini perform in 1832, and he realized he is great at that, and I want to be great like that. But
we should start a band.
No, he didn't start a band.
Oh.
He just said, like, I want to also be a virtuoso, a genius.
That's dang, if that's all it took, huh?
Yeah. And so he started practicing a lot more and, you know, composing a lot more and performing a lot more. He married a countess, and that was a big deal. He challenged another pianist, Thalberg, to a public...
Sorry, say it again? He challenged what?
Another pianist.
Oh, okay. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, I misheard.
This is Sawbones.
And I misheard.
Yeah. Clearly. We don't do genital jokes on Sawbones.
I wasn't even, I just
I know,
misheard.
I know that on some of your other podcasts,
you're
that sort of humor, that sort of toilet you're humor.
You're bringing puerile energy, Squid. Sorry, it's not me.
So he challenged another pianist, Thalberg, to
what?
Thalberg.
Okay.
That was
it's
his name.
It's just
his
hearing.
Last name. I don't.
It's just hearing.
To a public piano duel. Because he had criticized him. He had said some stuff like, I don't know, I think it's kind of boring. And the other guy was like, excuse me? Just because you're all dramatic doesn't mean I'm boring. I'm just really good at this. And so then they had a public duel,
yeah.
Like where they played pianos.
They tried to see who could play the quietest. It was a pianissing contest.
You feel good about that?
Yeah, actually I do.
All I could think of, I was picturing this, a public piano duel. And... you know, in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
100%. Daffy versus Donald?
Yeah. Yes.
One of the craziest scenes that it even exists is honestly kind of a wild thing. But yes, 100%, honey, it's frame by frame burned into my memory.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm picturing these two doing. If you're interested, because I was reading, like, who won? Like, who did critics think was better between these two guys? Whose music, by the way, I was not familiar with prior to researching this episode. Who was better? And it seemed like it was kind of a draw. Like, there were people who said Thalberg is, like, the, like, more trained, like, better, like, classically better.
Yeah.
Of the craft, but that Liszt brings this sort of like new dramatic energy to it that was intriguing. And so.
And he's doing stuff with the face. You wouldn't believe he pulls these faces. He's like, ah, or whoa, it's amazing.
This isn't far off from why he was popular. We're going to get into this. So anyway, I guess it was kind of a draw. Everybody was like, I don't know, they're both good at piano. Why did we do this? That was kind of the
because we like piano. And everyone was like, yeah. And someone was like, somebody please invent TV.
But then after this is when his life started to change. So he was, like I said, he had married this countess and things weren't going well. So he had separated from the countess. He was out there on his own. He's a single guy again, you know.
Sure.
Composing and...
Oh, listen,
and,
you don't need to tell me how it is when you're a single guy out there composing on the town.
And he's touring Europe, and he does all these concerts in Berlin in the winter of 1841 into 1842. And at this time, he becomes very popular. Like, as he's touring a lot and performing a lot...
He just gets
people
like...
really start to notice him. So I don't know if it's his new, like, single guy energy.
Maybe it is... the piano is such a sexy instrument, a romantic instrument. You have to have extremely long fingers, from what I understand, to be really proficient at it, and people love that. And then that could be it, the mystery of that.
So I don't know that it was that.
It might not have been that.
The idea of somebody like touring and playing piano would not be weird, right? Like, there were lots of, you know, composers. Yeah. There were lots of people doing that.
Yeah, but
so, like, why was
he
attracting so much attention? And so it's interesting if you read about his performances. First of all, like, I mean, I guess he is just coming off of this, like, broken marriage. So maybe it is sort of like that I can do it with a broken heart energy.
Okay, we love
right?
that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I could be the next Miss List.
But there also is a lot written about the way he performed. So at the time, performing your classical music, you would sit and uh-huh. you would play your songs. Uh-huh. And it was all very buttoned up. And, you know, I mean, it's a conservative affair. Awesome. Like, yeah. you dress nicely, you sit.
It's chamber. It's chamber music.
Yes.
This is a chamber.
And this was not the way Liszt performed.
Oh, no.
So it is noted that he was very handsome.
Oh, my.
You can look up pictures of him and decide
for
yourself.
You know I am right now.
But he was thought to be very handsome. He had long hair and very nice features. And as he would play, it was described that he would toss his long hair back. Frequently,
dude.
And run his hands through his hair.
Oh, this looks like kind of your type of guy. And he's like kind of
does he look? I didn't think he looked like you.
No. Oh, thank you. No, like your kind of guy where it's like that dark broody guy. You like that kind of like effeminate broody guy. Energy.
He did have a dark.
I mean, look at this man. Look at this man. He looks like like what would you say? Like a sad. Okay, kind of like
I don't know. He's got Tamlin energy.
It's
in that
like
picture.
A little bit. He does look like Tamlin, like kind of like a Roger Daltrey in like his older era and younger. He's kind of like a little bit Draco Malfoy coded, I would say, if that makes sense.
So he's got kind of like the aristocratic
yeah,
nose.
Yeah, yeah.
What it, you know?
Very elegant. He looks cool. He looks like a cool dude. Honestly, even in his older years, his hair just kind of got like wilder. I don't know, man.
Yeah. So he's got like the long hair, and he would like. As he would play, he would look at the crowd. He would make eye contact. He would make faces in reaction to his music. It wasn't just sort of like the, like, grimly, it's, you know, focused, like, pounding away at the keyboard. He was like,
yeah, it
he
went
was
from like,
putting his whole body into it.
It was like, bum, 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 bum. And he made it more like, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, a little, yeah. He put a little spice in it. And he would, like, toss his hair around.
You've
and
made
he
that
would
a
make
butt.
Eye
I think
contact.
That tossing of hair so many times. People
well, they talk about it. Like, if you read in the articles about it, like, he would. That was a big thing. The fact that he would, like, and, like, people would write about watching the performance and how many times he, like, ran his fingers through his hair and then began to play again. And as he began to do these concerts all over Berlin, he got a reaction that previously we had not seen to other, you know, great pianists and performers of mm-hmm. the time.
Okay.
And hence the beginning of Listomania. So I want to tell you about this cultural phenomenon, Listomania, and what, you know, what we sort of draw from it today. But before we do that, we got to go to the billing department.
All right, let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. You've probably heard about HelloFresh in the past. It's a huge meal kit in America. I mean, the number one meal kit in America. But this fall, they're serving up even more love. Folks, this isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's new. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. You can also, if you're into veggies, you can eat greener with some new veggie-packed recipes that have two or more veggies per dish. That's, I gotta say, folks, that's ambitious for me. I think a two-veggie meal, I'd be feeling pretty darn good about myself. I really like this new offering from HelloFresh. All these options, you are definitely going to find some stuff that you love. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free breakfast for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus free breakfast for life. I think staying connected is really one of the best gifts that you can give during this holiday season. And I think Aura Frames is a really good way of doing that. Here's what you do. It's a digital photo frame. You set it up for the intended recipient, or they can set it up themselves, you know, if they're a little bit more tech savvy. But once that's done, you are able to send pictures onto that photo frame from anywhere wirelessly through the Aura app. So imagine this. You set it up for grandma, and then you capture a picture of the kids at the zoo. Maybe there's five dolphins. You're like, holy crap, grandma loves dolphins. She's going to love this picture. Well, she could be seeing it just by uploading it directly to her frame. Even if grandma's already got one, what if she needs a second one in the toilet? Or it doesn't have to be in there. It could be anywhere. But imagine that. You get beautiful designs from Aura range from like – I just saw the new Carver mat that I – it's new to me. I got a new Carver mat frame. It's really beautiful. I like all the designs. And I think you will too. Not just for you though. Maybe it's a gift. But you know what? Grab one for yourself. You're going to be jealous. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com. to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver mat frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code Sawbones at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Sawbones. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, this is Alden Ford.
And Mujan Zulfikari.
Two of the creators of Mission to Zix, your favorite improvised, obsessively sound-designed sci-fi sitcom here on the Max Fun Network. And the news is...
We're back! With an all-new miniseries set in the Zix universe, The Young Old Derf Chronicles.
Yeah.
Will Derf find his own killer before it's too late?
Ooh.
To find out how that question could possibly make sense, well, sure. You just have to tune in.
Yeah, we're so excited that episode one is out right now in the Mission to Zix feed. So, if you are looking for a little break from your own galaxy, we would love for you to check it out.
That's The Young Old Derf Chronicles. Search Mission to Zix, Z-Y-X-X, in your podcast app.
Or on MaximumFun.org.
Keep it fresh.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
And this is a promo for Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions. Every week, we're going to tell you about a bit of culture, a bit of history, how etiquette still applies in the modern day, all that stuff.
We also love to do biographies and histories of and, you know, general procedurals. How to do etiquette in today's society.
So, come check it out. Every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
Manners Schmanners. Get it?
So far this, honey, you said it was light on the medical, but like, I do not know why this man could possibly be medically related.
So people began to attend his concerts in droves because they heard about, you know, how great his music was, but also how like handsome he was. That was a big thing. And they started to observe, especially women, reacting in a way that at the time would have been very inappropriate and odd for women to act in public, at some, especially at a piano concert, right? So women began to fight over, like, getting closer to him, trying to get to the front row. Trying to get his attention during the performance.
Oh, trying to jockey for positions.
He noticed this and would begin to, like, sort of stoke that by leaving his gloves or his handkerchiefs.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Where women could, like, fight to get to the stage
or
and
so
get them.
Or so inclined men, Sydney. This is an enlightened era.
Certainly. But... women began to, like, fight over these things that he would leave behind. And, I mean, to the point where they described situations where, like, he left a handkerchief on the piano and women, like, tackled each other, grabbing at the handkerchief and ripping it to shreds so they could each get a piece of his handkerchief.
Well, I do appreciate that.
There was another performance where he had a glass of water and he at the end of the performance, he left some of the water still on stage, and women rushed the stage to take a sip from the glass.
That is so romantic.
His lips had touched.
I love that.
And again, I know that this sort of like behavior, like, kind of, you know, fans of a musical artist or like at a concert, people kind of going wild. This doesn't sound odd by today's standards, right? Like, we all go to concerts and we see our favorite artists and we're screaming and we're yelling. Now, I have never attempted to rush the stage at a Weezer concert to, like, grab River's glasses or something. Like, I wouldn't do that, but no, I would never. But I can see where, like, again, by today's standards, the idea that a fan would really try to get close to some, I mean, like, we know that happens. We
when
see
Travis
that.
Is at Fall Out Boy, he isn't thinking it's an arms race or a scene. He's thinking it's a concert and I'm enjoying it. But I'm not going to try to go up there with my best friends, Pete and the gang.
And join
them on stage. Mm-hmm.
I wondered how many names you were going to be able to drop there.
You would think because of the Teen Titans episode, I would know more, but
I don't know. There was people noted that he would smoke cigars, and so it was not uncommon for him to like toss his cigar stubs out for women to like battle over to keep as a souvenir. I mean, can you? That's a little grody to me.
That's
like,
kind of grody.
Can I take home your?
Hey, let me have your stubbins.
Cigar stub.
Let me have your stubbins.
Women began to like, I love this, to wear little cameos of him. So like
merch.
Yeah, this is like merch. No, literally like there was merch made around him, which again, at the time, this was very odd. This is not.
I mean, it is
early 1840s.
Yeah, but
in
my man's
Berlin.
Inventing the enamel pin game. Like, represent. Like,
he did.
I respect to you, my friend. Thank you for that. Thank you for those pins that put a lot of food on my kids' plates. Thank you.
Can you imagine that? That was the origin of this, where all of these ladies dressed in their finery, you know, usually very demure, very mindful, and instead they are screaming and yelling, throwing things at the stage, tearing at his handkerchiefs, and wearing dainty cameos with his face depicted on them to his concerts.
Brief aside, mm-hmm. just about the demure thing. You think about language and how, like, ideas get attached and how hard it is to, like, trace the origins of language because it's so malleable. And obviously, things have not been on the TikTok scale of, like, virality where we can spread the ideas so quickly. But, like, it's wild to think that there will be a time, and it may not be permanent, but there will be a time where, like, as a culture, if someone mentions the word demure, it will be tied to the word mind. Like, someone else will say mindful.
Mm-hmm.
And in 50 years, we may still be doing it and not know why we do
and
not, it.
And know
it's just like,
why.
I don't know, man. We just always say demure and mindful together. I don't know why we do it. That's just the way I feel. It feels weird if someone says demure and I don't also say mindful. At some point.
One woman famously gathered one of his cigar stumps. This was a common thing, and put it in a locket, and had it monogrammed.
That's cool.
Like diamond encrusted, FL.
That's cool.
Franz Liszt, and wore it around. Which again, by today's standards, this is very like.
Honestly, by today's standards, I'm jealous. We don't get anybody like this. You know what I mean? Like,
because you don't. Well, I mean this. I don't know, that would be, I guess you could generate that energy with a live podcast, but like he's playing piano.
It's
and
different.
Again, there was something very physical about his performance that, hey, that's clearly communicated. There was something about it that elicited passion.
With all due respect, I don't actually need my wife to sit here and just explain to me why playing piano is so much more sexy than podcasting. I do get it, but I would love to move on.
So in response to all this, in response to these performances, the you know, excitement around him, there were fainting spells. There were ladies not acting the way ladies act. So there was a writer, Heinrich Heine, who would write there were these inserts that would kind of go in, like, newspapers of the day to, like, fill you in on popular culture things that were happening. And he wrote musical, they were called, this is a French word, futons. So little inserts about, like, hey, I saw a concert and here's what it was like, kind of thing, right?
Gotcha.
Like little reviews. I get the sense reading them. I read through a bunch of his about different composers, mm-hmm. and they're like, there's a little bit of, like, I don't know, E! News energy to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just a little catty, just
yeah,
a little,
catch a little bit.
Yeah. And in them, he coined the term, like, he watched Franz Liszt perform and he said it has invoked a listomania.
It's really good.
And I think what's important to understand about that, because when you hear listomania in this context, and then of course you think Beatlemania because we exist now. And it doesn't feel like, okay, so what's the big deal? Everybody really loved it. And he said listomania. To use the word mania at this time and place in history
because
was a big deal.
Right. if I had to guess, it's sort of one of those things where, like, the mania, the teeth have been taken out of the word because it has been used in this pop sci sense for so many years. Is that right?
Yes. Nowadays, we can say mania at the end of anything, you know, like.
Because of this. I mean, probably in part because of this. Like, obviously, there's different, like, appending mania did not begin with listomania.
Right.
But, like. For sure.
Yes. And so you can say that at the end of something now, and it doesn't necessarily mean something major. Now, at the time, the idea of a mania was it was a medical condition. Mm-hmm. The idea that someone was manic, experiencing mania over something or experiencing just the concept of mania would mean that they were acting in a way that was irrational, maybe confusing, maybe dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous to themselves, perhaps, acting in a way that could cause them self-harm, acting in a way that might bring harm to others. If you said someone was experiencing mania, you would take that very seriously. Yeah. You wouldn't get a phone call, but if you got a letter, like, "I'm so sorry, dear lady, your cousin is experiencing mania," you would be very upset by that, right? Like,
it is listomania, but... Still, mania.
But the other connotation with mania isn't just that it was a medical condition that would need to be treated in some way, and perhaps, especially among women, not just treated, but maybe we needed to put you somewhere to keep you away from people, right? A woman experiencing mania at this time in history may be institutionalized because she is a danger to the fabric of society at that point. Because the other thing about mania is that it was thought to be contagious.
Oh.
So if I, as a big List fan, show up at the concert, and I am a woman, and I am, I probably not throwing underwear. I didn't read any reports of that. Probably like throwing my handkerchief, right? Like, I don't know.
Petty Fords, all those old...
And I'm wearing the cameo, and I'm screaming, and I'm doing unseemly things for a lady of the time. Perhaps the lady next to me, who otherwise is an upright citizen, would do the same thing. And so when he wrote that there's a listomania, this was a big deal, because what he is saying is he is invoking something in society that will change the way people act, specifically women. And other women will also become infected with this.
Yeah.
And we will begin to see changes among the way our ladies behave. And this is a call to action, in a sense.
Yeah.
We must stop this. We've got to stop people.
Yeah.
And I will say,
I would be interesting to test the contagious theory in a, just like get a List fan in a room with someone who's never heard his music before and just see if she could like, just stand near her long enough. Like, you get it, right? List. Right? Franz Liszt?
Look at his hair.
Right? No. You can't have any...
Oh.
It's got to be contagious, right? So she can't be reacting to... You just have to be near the person who has listomania just to see if they, like, get it. It's like being a Doors fan. You know what I mean? They're not made. They're born. You know, you just are a Doors fan or not. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like that. It's just like you're around the person. You're like... I don't know who Franz Liszt is or what he does, but I am crazy about it.
But I am sold. Get me a lithograph.
Get me a lithograph and an enamel cameo. I'm crazy for this guy.
I'm in for it. Where are his cigar butts? So, and if you look at some of the critics of the time, a lot of them talked about how his music was different. Sometimes it was discordant. Like, he was experimenting with different styles and different compositions that were unique. And not everybody liked him. Like, if you read a lot of the music critics, they will all say, these are largely men, so I don't know if that colors their review. But they would say, like, it's not really for everyone. This isn't as easily digestible as a lot of the music of the time, which everyone would say, like, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
It wasn't always beautiful.
It's
sometimes
a little more challenging.
It was challenging. And that spoke to the culture of the time. A lot of people think that it had to do with the attitude of people in northern Germany and the Berliners and that they had a different, like, that we were changing society at this point. They were looking at, like, challenging conventional ways, and that this was sort of a counterculture. List mm-hmm. represented a count. And so the mania that evolved around him was, it's like we're using this as an excuse to be new and different and change.
And so we're using the mania as mm-hmm. a way to, like, tamp down this, like, social shift that we're not maybe crazy about.
But people took that really seriously. There was a in a Munich paper in 1843, one reporter said, "List fever, a contagion that breaks out in every city our artist visits and which neither age nor wisdom can protect, seems to appear here only sporadically and asphyxiating cases such as appeared so often in northern capitals need not be feared by our residents with their strong constitutions." So there you see Munich, southern Germany, saying, "We will not be infected by the contagion of
from him.
Listomania, like the northern Germans will." But I think that it, if you then, like, fast forward, so eventually, and I will say, like, List was very popular for quite a while. He ended up with this sort of tortured romance mm-hmm. where he fell in love with a married woman and she had to go get her marriage annulled by the Catholic Church.
Ooh,
and then they
spicy.
Eventually refused. And so then he entered, like, a monastery for the last of his life and just composed away in a monastic cell somewhere, writing his tortured songs all by himself. And so he was this very romantic figure. Is, you know, people were interested by that, intrigued by that. Eventually, obviously, his popularity waned, and there were other musical artists. But it does sort of give us a roadmap for when you fast forward to, like, Beatlemania, where you saw, you know, people at Beatles concerts famously mm-hmm. acting much the way that we described these people at List's concerts, you know, behaving. And I think what it just sort of underlines is this idea of mania being used as a way to stoke fear about cultural change and shift. People are acting in a new way.
Yeah.
And we can use popular culture to help explain that for us or give us a cover. I'm only acting that way because I'm so wild about this music.
Yeah.
When really we're acting that way because we're changing. We're moving forward. We're progressing. And I think that's really fascinating. Nowadays, we don't hear the word, you know, if I don't think anybody says Swiftomania about Taylor Swift.
I bet you could Google it. There's got to be something, right?
But, I mean, it's the same idea. People were super excited to watch that podcast who would never watch that podcast because they love her so much. And so, but when you hear that, you don't think, like, oh, my goodness, they're dangerous. Although, I would say echoes of this during the election when Taylor Swift famously came out and told people to vote. And then you heard a lot of voices from the conservative side saying, like, Taylor Swift is indoctrinating people
right,
and she's
right,
dangerous.
Right.
It's the same idea. It's the same. I mean, we're calling on that same idea that people really loving something and using it as a way to explain them moving forward and progressing and mm-hmm. changing culture and society. There are always going to be establishment voices who say, this is dangerous.
Hey, I have a question. As we were looking at you were talking about some of those individual anecdotes, and they're very specific. And it made me wonder, like, this is somebody who was, you know, making merchandise, had different ideas about, like, how to grow his career. Do you wonder about if his people or him himself were, like, fanning these flames? Like, were these stories encouraged? Like, you think about who is in charge of history for this stuff. I wonder if some of these specific stories were preserved because he or, like, the people managing him, like, wanted the narrative.
I definitely, and I'm not an expert on List, certainly. I've read a lot about him to research this episode, but I'm certain there are people who know a lot more about him than me, obviously. But I got the impression from what I read, from quotes from him, from people writing about his performances, that he was, if not encouraging, certainly not discouraging
right.
this sort of discourse around him. I think he did understand that he was doing something beyond playing music,
right.
that performing and becoming a cultural figure is more than just whatever your craft or skill is, that you can build something around it that can change the way people see you and see music and see culture. I think he understood that. And, you know, I think in the grand scheme of artists and performers, there are differences in that, right? Like there's some people who just grind away and are super skilled and do what they do so well, but aren't necessarily trying to build a culture around them. And then there are other artists who pursue that. I always think of Jimmy Buffett when I think that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Buffett was beyond a musician. He built a lifestyle. Yeah. And Franz Liszt did it too.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. I sure enjoyed having you here, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and I'll get more medical next week. I was just so fascinated once Kate told me about Listomania, and then I started reading about it.
Do whatever you want. It's your show.
I think the idea of mania.
If the Kelce brothers can do an episode about Taylor Swift on their football show, certainly we can do one about Listomania.
We'll get more medical next week. Don't worry. I'll get something gory or gooey or bloody for you.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to Taxpayers for use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thanks to you for listening. That's going to do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.